now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello, I'm Ali Shilton and a very warm welcome to Shout Out.
And I'm RB Fenchurch and on today's show we're off to Cape Town.
And to the legacy and queer ballroom dancing that is.
And it's LGBT plus history month and we're going back in time here in Bristol.
We're going back to the Radnor Hotel actually with Ben and Peggy.
All coming today.
Right here on Shout Out.
Ba-dum-dum.
I get told off by Lara if one of us doesn't do that.
We enjoy you getting told off, I'll be honest.
She's nowhere near here, and I can hear her shouting at me, going,
Andrew! Oh, Andy!
So, how are we all? Hello.
Speaking of Andrew.
I've been seeing you for a while, haven't
I? I know. I've been helping my sister out by walking her dog every morning, so I'm just going to have a bit of a nap in a minute.
Oh, right. So, was it snowing this morning where you were?
No, it wasn't. It was just wet.
Horrible. Oh, right, okay. Because it snowed at the airport, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit higher up at the airport, isn't it?
Do you know the history behind Losgate Airport?
I thought you were going to say behind snow.
Comes from Scotland.
Originally, Losgate Airport was an RAF testing runway designed to test aircraft in poor weather conditions.
Oh.
And that's why we've now got it as our main airport and not Filton.
Filton was built for the big...
Concord. The Bristol Brabazon.
Was it Concord? I thought it was for one of the big ones. I know there was a village at the end and they
knocked
it down, basically. You can see the relics of it. So, but it's going to become a big arena soon, isn't it?
Ooh,
so yeah, they actually announced it. I saw it on the news earlier, they announced it.
Finally getting the acts together.
Yeah. Yeah, along with transport as well. We're back to trams, apparently. So,
that's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they pull it off, this is a problem. I mean, I've been here since I was 18. So
they pull a lot of things off in the council chambers, you know, but I'm not sure where the trams are going to make a comeback.
Can you imagine Gloucester Road? I mean, what happens to cars? I guess that's a question, isn't it?
It was a very different situation, wasn't it?
Monorail up above, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Steering into people's bedrooms. So,
I mean, ironically, Bristol was once very famous for trams.
Until the war, and the lines got blown up.
You are right, it stopped in the war because the main the main power distribution centre, which is now where Dunelm is, actually got bombed. But they were already dying because of the invention of the coach and the bus.
Okay.
So they were starting to lose market share because they couldn't go as far out and the like.
And they weren't using petrol either, obviously.
Well, I don't think we really knew about that back then. So it's funny though, because when the car first came around, the two technologies that were really, really common in cars was actually a steam engine and electric. Petrol actually came about later and was the minority one, but as we now know, it obviously became the most famous. So
you're listening to Nerd FM.
Well, it is LGBT History Month, you know, so kick off with a bit of history. So I've got a lovely one for you later on. I'm going to take you back to, I think it's 2012. It was actually originally recorded, but there used to be a place here called the Radnor Hotel, which I'll tell you a little bit about later. But you know which I'm talking about, don't you, Terry? But basically, after the war, it was where you went to Bristol if you were LGBT or T, and it was looked after by a lovely lady called Peggy, who went there once and never left for 28 years. And I remember Ben Bird interviewing her. It took him like so many evenings to edit because she literally swore the whole way through. When you hear it later, there's no swearing in it whatsoever, and it sounds like she talks really, really quick. That's not quite what actually happened.
Peggy was a great character, and she passed on a couple of years ago, but she lived till she was 98.
Yes.
And was regular at Gay West's cafe in Bath at the St Michael's Community Centre, right up to her dying day. So,
gay men were her friends.
They were certainly were.
So. Anyway, Steph's been off ballroom dancing, haven't you?
Not me personally, no.
Spoil the illusion.
I wouldn't mind popping over to South Africa, but I did chat to Rory.
You'd like a bit of ballroom dancing, wouldn't you?
Actually, it's not the ballroom dancing that we all thought, and I had in my mind, like probably our listeners and yourselves now, about what ballroom is, the stuff that started in New York and that, the classic ballroom. But it's not. They do more voguing, but it's still called ballroom because they're in a ballroom.
Do they slut drop?
I've no idea, but I've got arthritis, so unlikely I would do that.
Well, have a listen to this.
As far as I know, ballroom dancing started someplace in New York. I'm joined by Rory at the other end of the planet to where I currently am, South Africa. Rory, welcome to Shoutout.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very welcome. Now, ballroom dancing, how is that grown in South Africa?
I think, in terms of ballroom, in the way that we do it here in South Africa, I wouldn't call it ballroom dancing. I would call it more ballroom, the ballroom scene. There are categories that require dancing, for example, the Vogue Femme category, as well as the African performance category, which I can get into a little bit later. There are dance style categories that are at the balls. But in terms of ballroom, if I go back to how I got introduced to ballroom, I was introduced to ballroom in my personal capacity. So I would be at university, I would finish my classes, and I would actually run to the journalist faculty, because they had access to YouTube. And then I would be on YouTube searching videos of voguing. And I would watch people like Laomi, I would watch people like Kevin, Prodigy, I would watch people like Deshawn, Wesley. So these are all icons and legends in the States where it all began. So I looked up to these individuals, and I was in awe, like I was completely in awe. And it spoke to me as a queer person, because for a long time in my previous life, I would call it, where I started dancing at the age of 5 years old. And I was very involved in the hip hop dance and the street style sort of dance industry or movement that was here in South Africa. And that is where my dance history stems from. So I was doing competitions such as SADTA here in South Africa. And I would also travel for my dancing as well. I would travel to Johannesburg for the various competitions over there. And so I've always had a relationship with dancing, but I always felt that there was never a category for the style of dance, for the type of movement that I was doing, because I was very effeminate. And I was obviously having to compete with male dancers in my section that I was in, and nobody was moving like I was. You know, there wasn't really many people that were moving in an effeminate way. It was more like the lock and pop and very masculine way of moving. I then had to learn how to move in a masculine way. And for a long time, I'd forgotten actually how to like just be true to myself. And then through me finding and discovering ballroom, discovering voguing, that is where I was like, this is me. Like, I see myself doing this. And immediately from that moment on is where I was completely in love with it. I was in love with the whole idea of other family, chosen family, the idea that you could just go out there and be, in a group with various other queer individuals or individuals who also identify as other. I feel like that was such a powerful thing for me. And in 2017, Kirvin Fortein, which is also known as the mother of the House of Le Cap, which was the first ballroom house that started here in South Africa, in Cape Town specifically. So Kirvin had, they were doing their studies in the Netherlands, I think it was in Rotterdam, if I'm not mistaken, where they were introduced to ballroom over there through connecting with the House of Vineyard, which funny enough was also a founding house in Amsterdam. So through that connection and meeting Amber Vineyard, which is still the mother of the house, the legendary Amber Vineyard, they had a connection there. And when Kirvin then came home, because Kirvin wanted to come back home, because he recognized that the queer community, specifically in his community, he comes from an area called Makassa, and he recognized that in his community and communities like that, that the queer community was embodying and loving ballroom without actually knowing that they were doing it. Because Cape Town's queer scene was also quite, we've got an amazing drag scene here in Cape Town as well, with a brilliant, talented drag artists. And just the, we all know that ballroom stems from pageantry. There's a lot of drag influence in ballroom as well. So the fact that we had this existing community here, with people engaging in a way that was very similar to how people were engaging in, you know, in America and in Europe, in that ballroom sphere. I mean, that was the moment where Kirvin was like, no, I need to bring it back home. I need to give our people the experience of ballroom. I need to share this with them. And so they hosted their first function at 0 to 1 with Nikki Vineyard. The two of them kind of did this together, and we kind of got our blessing in a way from the House of Vineyard, because that is how it works in ballroom.
What is the scene like? Because there's going to be listeners from all over the world who aren't familiar with South Africa's scene for the queer community. Is it quite safe in South Africa to be LGBTQ?
I would say in the city, yes. Obviously, wherever you go around the world, being queer, you are always in danger. And I don't think that you should ever forget that, you know, being other or being different, you're always going to stand out amongst people who don't understand. So, but for the most part, I would say it's quite safe to be open about who you are here in Cape Town and in South Africa. You do get the odd catcall and whatever, but that is just, that is just a thing of society. You know, society needs to unlearn those things. But I would say, as a queer person in South Africa, my experience has been, I'm safe, but I'm safer when I'm with my community. Because once we are together, when we are in numbers, that is when we are most safe. I feel like when we are alone by ourselves, that is where, you know, the danger comes in. So I feel like our spaces are safe. It's just you always have to be vigilant. You always just have to be aware of yourself and others around you. But for the most part, and everybody else that has come to Cape Town, they've always had an amazing experience, specifically in our queer spaces.
Mm. Yeah. So going back to the dance, you alluded to the fact that the ballroom you do is not the ballroom that probably people would know about. You're quite wide in the way you dance. It seems quite a special place that you've created. So what sort of dance is happening in your space?
I would say, I mean, if I'm specifically talking about dance as a genre, I would say that specifically like voguing, that is something on its own. And I feel like if you want to get into like what that is about, a good documentary to watch is Paris is Burning. Paris is Burning is something that if you want to be, if you want to get to know what ballroom is about, where it started, the history, the houses, Paris is Burning is the best, one of the best documentaries. There are other documentaries that you can obviously go and watch, but I would say that in the beginning, I would say watch Paris is Burning, because it will give you everything you need to know about what ballroom is, where it started, who started it, who were the houses, etc., etc. So I feel like I wouldn't say ballroom is a sort of dance style. Ballroom is a movement. So I think people need to understand that when I'm talking about ballroom, I'm not talking about the classical ballroom, you know, of the waltz and all of that. That's completely different. That's like a style of dance. Whereas ballroom, when we speak about ballroom, we speak about a community, a movement. It's not just a dance style. Ballroom is more than just voguing. Ballroom is so much more than that. There are so many different facets within ballroom. It's quite a lot to get through. But for what I can say is that I feel like the Google is your friend. If you want to know anything, ChatGPT is your friend. So I feel like if you want to get into the history and know a lot about what is happening, YouTube is also your friend. There's so many videos that you can go and watch to go and follow what's happening in the different scenes. I'm sure in the European scene, there's so many different spaces and places that one can go to. I wish I could. That is basically one of my goals and dreams, is to travel and go and experience ballroom authentically in the way that it's been done for so many years. Because ballroom has a long history of like 60, 70 plus years. So I would love to be in it in a way that I have never experienced it before. But what I can say is it's growing in Cape Town, it's growing in Johannesburg, it's growing in South Africa as a whole, because Cape Town is not the only scene. There's the Johannesburg scene as well, where there's even a Kenyan scene. We've got ballroom in Kenya. I heard that there was ballroom in other parts of Africa as well. So ballroom is slowly starting to grow here in South Africa and in other parts of Africa as well, which is really amazing. Because, I mean, for me personally, Cape Town, I feel like, would obviously be the safest place, as well as Johannesburg. We know in other parts of Africa, it's not safe to be openly queer. It's not safe. It's not even legal sometimes in those countries. So I feel like Cape Town and Johannesburg being that sort of safe haven, there really needs to be work done to try and connect to the other parts of the other scenes in Africa, as well as our local scenes here. I know there are other scenes that are up and coming in the different provinces here in South Africa as well. So the work is slowly starting, you know, it's picking up slowly but surely. And I just think that we can only go up from here.
Rory, we've run completely out of time, but before we go, we need to be able to contact you and get more information. So if you've got a website and any social medias that people can start following you on and get more information about what you do.
Yes, I can give you. So I would say it would be important to follow Legacy. So we have an Instagram account where we post all our functions and everything involved with Legacy. The handle for that is it's Legacy Ball underscore CT. And you can find us there on Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, my Instagram is just Rory Bingham, which is RORIBINGHAM. I come up as, I think, Rory 007. So, and then also Addition Events, because this is the production company that I work with and is also the co-founder of Legacy. So myself and Leah Deba, I hope I'm saying it correctly. The two of us, we work together to produce Legacy. So if you'd also like to follow Addition underscore Events. You can find Addition Events on Instagram as well. And then if you'd like to follow Leah, it is Leah Deba. It is LEADEBBAH on Instagram as well. So you can follow us, give us a follow. We're always posting content. I would say Addition Events is also a really great space. They are also big on collaboration. And this is how we started our journey with Addition Events.
Rory, thank you so much for joining us on Shout Out. It's been an absolute joy, and I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate this. Thank you so much for having me.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's Look Mum No Computer, and the song's called Youth 8500, which may actually be 8500, I don't know, but anyway, it's
is that atypical of his sound?
Yeah, he's known for his electronic pop. So, and the connection, in case you're wondering, is that the song that's going to be in Eurovision has not been announced, so obviously I couldn't get it, but that is the artist, and that was the most popular song I could find when I was on iTunes.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
We're going to lose.
Well, it's funny you say that. The response has been very mixed. I missed that. What did you say?
I was just thinking the deadpan comment. We're going to lose. Very funny.
Right.
Yeah, but I thought it was just the BBC that picked it, but you say not.
I've just done some Googling and looked on the BBC website. Look Mum No Computer was chosen as the UK's representative following an extensive search led by UK Eurovision project director and music industry figure David May, alongside Andrew Cartmell, executive producer of BBC Studios North and head of delegation for the UK.
Head of delegation?
Means.
Well,
yeah.
Oh. So is that the song?
Yeah, Record Breakers. Do you remember Roy Castle?
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, so, yeah, okay. Well, we're going to lose.
Rather underwhelming, that one, I'm afraid.
I'm here for the topic of references.
No, I will reiterate, that is not the song that's going into Eurovision. They haven't announced the song, that's just the artist. But that is kind of atypical. He's known for his electro-pop.
Let's give him a break, you know. It might sound dead like Howard Jones, circa 1983, but perhaps it's going to be something really surprising that's going to blast the Eurovision audience. Away.
Well, if it goes like normal, we think some of them are really, really good and they do rubbish. So we think this one's really rubbish, might do really, really well.
Sometimes quirky songs do well at Eurovision, don't they?
Look at Sandy Shaw.
Yeah, and the French always enter some strange songs over the years, and they do quite well, don't they? So Celine Dion once won for Switzerland, didn't she, in 1988?
So. Yeah, but she's got a cracking voice.
She represented Switzerland, though. Yeah. I think she's Swiss-Canadian.
They
yeah.
just gave her citizenship just for the...
Just for Eurovision.
And then revoked it straight after.
Everyone's very torn about Eurovision.
Yeah, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, shall we?
So, you know, it's a really, really difficult one. So I'm not going to kick it off, because we'll be here doing another show on it, won't we? Let's be honest. But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, it's normally known as like the LGBT Olympics type of thing, isn't it? But it's a little bit subjective this year.
It's a shame. But, controversy reigns.
Yeah.
Doesn't it just?
It is the era we live in, so. Now, we ought to find out about what else is going on locally
in
the world.
What else controversially is going on?
So, is it just yourself, Mr. Starr, or is the lovely... Stephanie Barnett.
I'm not reading the news after last week. I thought I was reading a medical journal. I think half the audience fell asleep. I did.
Sorry. But when Terry reads it, you never notice, because like he can put the most big tongue twister, like complex medical word in it and read it like a consummate professional. And I always assumed it was because he knew it. And I remember asking you a couple of years ago, how do you do it? He said, I just make it up. As long as you sound professional, they don't know.
That's what the BBC do, let's face it. They can't pronounce half the Welsh words they try and put in the news.
Or the Scottish.
Or Scottish words. They just say it with enough gusto, and everyone will say, oh, that's not
you think, words. No, you've got it wrong there, mate.
Have we got any tongue twisters today, or are we, no? Okay.
Not too bad tonight.
Well, let's find out what's going on in the world.
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along. Hate crimes motivated by disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity are set to be recognised as aggravated offences under a proposed change to the law. An amendment to the Crimes and Policing Bill would extend existing aggravated offences, currently covering race and religion, to include sexual orientation, transgender identity, disability, and sex, bringing higher maximum penalties where hostility is proven. At present, courts can apply a sentencing experiencing uplift when hostility is based on LGBT status or disability. The new amendment would instead create distinct aggravated offences from the outset. The LGBT plus anti-abuse charity Gallup has described the proposal as a landmark moment, whilst Stonewall has called it a major step towards equal access to justice. Paediatrician Dr. Hilary Cass has been reported to the General Medical Council following a BBC interview with a fellow doctor accusing her of misleading the public on gender-affirming care for young people. Dr. Helen Weberly, founder of the online clinic Gender GP, submitted a formal referral after Dr. Cass appeared on the programme Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, where she said that transgender young people had been, quote, weaponised in a toxic debate. Dr. Weberly alleges that Dr. Cass has breached several principles of good medical practice and that key claims in the Cass Review lack evidential support. The Cass Review, commissioned in 2020, made 32 recommendations on restructuring gender identity services, and its publication preceded the NHS decision to end new puberty blocker prescriptions for under 18s outside research settings. The Good Law Project and three individual claimants brought a judicial review against the Equality and Human Rights Commission over its interim guidance on single-sex spaces and toilet provision for trans people. However, the High Court has dismissed the challenge, finding the EHRC's updates lawful. The ruling confirmed that service providers such as shops, gyms and venues can lawfully allow trans people to use toilets and changing rooms matching their gender, but endorsed a stricter approach in workplaces where facilities must be provided on the basis of biological sex. Campaigners have described the outcome as a workers' rights crisis for trans people, and the Good Law Project has warned that the ruling may embolden discriminatory workplace policies. LGBTQ organisations have also raised renewed concerns about the charity Sex Matters, which campaigns for clarity on sex in law and policy and was registered as a charity in 2024. The Charity Commission has confirmed that it has an ongoing regulatory compliance case into the organisation, which was opened after complaints about its activities. The Commission has not announced any formal regulatory action. Sex Matters says that it is confident it is acting lawfully and that its work protects human rights. Critics argue that its campaigns risk contributing to a hostile climate for trans people and have called for closer scrutiny of charities whose work significantly affects trans communities. Well, as you've heard, the BBC has announced the United Kingdom's entry for the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest. Experimental musician and inventor Sam Battle, better known as Look Mum, No Computer. The contest will take place in Vienna in May. The UK song has not yet been formally released. Battle first gained attention as frontman of the indie band Zebra before building a large online following for his inventive electronic projects. He described himself as completely bonkers excited to join the Eurovision legacy and promised to bring his full creative vision to this performance. European news now. Two major developments have been welcomed by LGBTQ plus organisations. The European Parliament, for starters, has adopted a recommendation calling for the, quote, full recognition of trans women as women. Transgender Europe responded by saying the Parliament had affirmed what our communities have always known, that trans women are women and our rights must be protected. Meanwhile, the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe has passed a resolution urging member states to ban so-called conversion practices. ILGA Europe welcomed the move, saying the vote sends a clear message that conversion practices have no place in Europe. All Europe added that Europe is moving forward on human rights whilst other countries are moving backwards, reflecting wider concern about diverging approaches across the continent. And finally, new international rankings show the UK has continued a steep decline in European LGBTQ equality tables. In 2015, the UK topped ILGA Europe's rainbow map, but 10 years later, by 2025, it had fallen to 22nd place, one of the lowest positions in Western Europe. monitoring organisations cite stalled reforms, rising hostility in public debate, and increasing legal uncertainty for trans people as the key factors driving this change. That was Shoutout News. There'll be more next week. Stay connected with Shoutout Radio and check out our news feeds at shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Believe it or not, that's 25 years old, ooh, that song. That's Hearsay. We're pure and simple. Yeah. If you're a fan of Pop Idol, if you remember that, and X Factor and the like, that's from the original. That was Pop Stars. It was the first ever attempt to kind of like document on TV the actual formation of a band, and it was them band, yeah. And the runners up were actually Liberty X, if you remember.
So
Liberty X.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah. They're to blame for all this.
Yes. Yeah. So, and then we were talking off air, and, yeah, and
the video for that is just it's a standard video until you just introduce the concept of lighting your farts, and then rewatch the video, and there are flares going off behind every single member of the band at one point or another.
I mean, they look like they're walking through like a bit of a futuristic set, don't they? And as they're singing, there's all these like flashes of flames going off behind them.
Yeah. But
then I'll be pointed out, showing me the video before we went on air. It looks like they're just like farting lots and it's catching fire. Once you see that, you can never unsee that. So have a look on YouTube. It's Hearsay, Purity, and Hearsay. I doubt you are listening, but if you are, I'm very, very sorry. So I was a huge fan of you 25 years ago. They didn't hang around for long, sadly. They big bust up, didn't they? So,
did they?
Yeah.
They fell out.
Yeah. Liberty X were actually even more successful, but their career was ruined when one of them said something extremely homophobic. And they were supposed to be London Pride. And got cancelled very, very quickly. Yes. And from that point, they kind of disappeared.
So. Power of the Pink Pound?
Yeah.
Indeed. So be warned what you say.
Yes. Anyway, lots of LGBT history for you. And I've got another bit we were talking about at the top of the show. With the Radnor Hotel. Now, Terry, I know you're aware. Are any of the rest of you aware of the Radnor?
I'd never heard of it today at all.
I mean, it's quite interesting. If you talk to the youth, it makes me sound old, but if you talk to, like, you know, teens and 20-somethings these days, they're very used to how much more equal things are. I don't want to say they're equal, they're not, but they're an awful lot more equal. But if you go back in time, especially if you go back to like pre the 60s when the Wolfenden Report came out, which recommended the decriminalisation of homosexuality, everything was very kind of hidden and underground. I remember even when I came out in 1996, a gay club was a gay club and it was protected, and you didn't let heterosexual people in for fear of being beaten up more than anything else. Wouldn't think of it these days, you know. I mean, it's quite mixed when you go somewhere like the Queen Shilling or and the like. It's great it's got that far. They reckon it opened around about 1925, the Radnor Hotel.
That's post-World War One.
That's post-World War One. That's how old it was. And it closed. It did open again in many different guises, but as the Radnor, it closed in 1976. Now, Peggy was probably two when it was opened. Peggy, who you'll hear in a minute in this interview, she went there at the ripe old age of 15. Bear in mind, it was a hotel, it wasn't a bar. And as you'll hear, she didn't drink alcohol or anything because they did abide by the law. But she ended up going back there and working as behind the bar and running the hotel. And she was there for about 28 years. And it became very much the go-to if you were LGB or T. And its reputation went all around the world, as you'll hear. I'll let her explain it. But it basically became a safe haven for anyone. And, of course, we have quite a huge community here, especially if you think things like we have the Bristol Old Vic, attracted a lot of actors and actresses in, statistically has a higher percentage that are LGBT plus, etc. So the Radnor really became the place to go. Yeah. It looked like a normal hotel on the outside, but on the inside,
it wasn't.
So it wasn't quite like that.
Yeah.
As a side note, what's quite interesting as well is around the kind of like 60s time as well, we had a gay nightclub here in Bristol called the Moulin Rouge, which a lot of people don't know. One of the first Moulin Rouges was here as well. And it was built on top of an old swimming pool. You can find the odd photo around it, but you will never find a photo with anyone in it. And the reason you won't is because it was illegal to be gay. So when the photos were taken, everyone got out of the way of the camera, because if you got caught with your photo in a gay place, they just come and arrest you. So there are very few photos of these. I was able to find some of the Radnor Hotel. Big thank you to... Outstories Bristol. If you go check out their website and have a look for the Radnor Hotel, you'll find some lovely old photos there. There's also a lovely article they've actually done on Peggy herself, in dedication to her. Sadly, she passed away in 2021. But Ben Bird, who was one of the earlier shout-outers, actually managed to speak to her all the way back in 2012. This was originally broadcast. So have a listen to this. This is Ben talking to Peggy.
I have the pleasure of being joined by...
Peggy Hancock.
Now, Peggy, when did you first visit the Radnor?
I first went there when I was 14 and I had a lemonade, and it was the most outrageous pub I've ever been in my life. And I thought, I'm going to work here, and I did one day for 28 years.
Okay, so can you take us back, Claire? Let's imagine we're on St Nicholas Street, just about to enter the Radnor. What would we see?
It was like a theatrical pub. Tatty old pub anyway, but a famous actress that came to Bath Theatre or the Bristol Old Vic after they finished their show used to come in after time.
Okay, and what was it like inside?
It was the scruffiest old place I've ever seen in your life, with a step, with a filthy, dirty curtain where the pissy queens used to go. It was all one bar, but up this step and behind this curtain where all the pissy queens used to go. And I used to say, a crowd of the gays used to come over from Bath, and I'd say, the girls from Twerton have arrived. And it was just the most magic place to work. It wasn't going to work for me. It was like going for a party.
So, Peggy, what would a typical day be like?
Well, I worked in the morning. I did all the cleaning and mirrors and everything. And then the market boys used to come in. And then at night, I go back for the evening. But if there were no parties, we'd have a lock-in with all the queens. And the policeman used to knock on the door about 2 o'clock. And I said, what do you want, Bobby? He said, pint of Worthington. I said, I'm busy. And he'd come in, take his helmet off. And the queen would dance around with him. Wasn't gay. But he'd give us warning when the toilets were going to be raided. Very famous toilets in Bristol, like Anchor Road, places like that. He used to come in. He said, I'm going to warn you. And he'd have a couple of pints and put his helmet on and bugger off out. It was magic. It was like, every night was like a party. I used to call it going into Cuckoo Land. You never knew when the door opened and was coming in. You'd get Eric Portman, the very famous old actor. I was behind the bar one day and a man came in called Basil Paterson, and he was a ballet dancer at the Hippodrome from Australia. And he said, I'm looking for Peggy. I said, that's me. He said, well, I saw your name on the cottage wall in Sydney. Said, when you're in Bristol, go in the round and ask for Peggy. And we became friends, and he opened a ballet school in Bristol.
And so, obviously, from a young age, you were hanging around with gay people.
Oh, I was at school with two gays, and I always went around with them. I've been on the gay scene for sort of 70-odd years, and I go to Palm Springs every year to stay with gay people, and it's like my whole world is gay. It's all this going down.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely brilliant. I was going to say, so at the time then, you were hanging around with gay people when it probably wasn't the thing to do, I suppose.
I mean, we used to get gangs of boys in on a Friday, yobbos, to beat up the gays, and the police wanted gay people in the Radnor because we were all contained. There was no other gay pub. When the Woofenden report came out, we were arrested on the centre. About 30 of us stood a ring of roses around a policeman and said, Woofenden's our friend. So they suddenly took us to the police, only to interview us, but it was like, it was a secret world, you know? And I used to go to London to big parties, and it was all secret. That was when it was exciting. Now it's a bit open now.
But obviously, you know, you've had a fantastic life and you've really enjoyed it.
My life has been, as I said, because of the gay people, they've made my life. They were like my children. I met a boy last week and I said, I'm the grandmother of all these boys. He said, well, really?
Is it Auntie Peg they call you, is that right?
Auntie Peg, yeah. Oh, years ago in Bristol, I was called the Queen Mother. Queen Mother of the homosexuals. And it was like, people say to my mother, what's a Peggy doing in that pub full of puffs? My mother said, they're her friends. They're gay, but they don't do naughty things. They only kiss and hold hands.
Oh, if only senior who.
I know. Well, she got to know later on. You cannot imagine what it's like, because there's nowhere like that now. It was like a magic world. And then two outrageous friends of mine who died used to come in drag with pillbox hats, and the landlord was a Dutchman. He used to say, F off. And I said, oh, look, they look wonderful. Let them come in. He said, no, no. They used to come in before and drag, and the landlord would be... Sometimes I'd dress up like trousers and shirt like a man, and he'd call me George. But then when I was feminine, I was Peggy. I was like two people.
Peggy, thank you for sharing your memories with us. For Shout Out, this has been Ben Bird in the Radnor Hotel.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
There you go. Big thank you to Ben Bird. A bit of a blast from the past there. We haven't heard his voice on the show for ages.
Yes.
So you can really get a sense of what a character she was, can't you?
Oh, definitely. And I've met her a number of times over the years, and she was really...
And I'm not like... I mean, you can kind of hear the edit. It's there. She literally just... potty mouth, you know.
Oh yeah, Peggy was.
So, but she gave you a description, so it wasn't quite screaming inside. It sounded like it was quite a dingy place. But you know, it was of its time.
Yeah, as gay bars were in those days.
Yeah, it's now a wedding venue for the streets.
You're welcome.
I don't know if it's still open as that. Is it okay?
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. It's private venues.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. Ah, interesting. Yeah. I mean, the building's been there for ages. It's opposite to the Nick's Market.
Yeah.
So, side note, I don't know if you saw the news today. It needs an awful lot of money spent on it. Nick's Market.
Yes, five and a half million, isn't it? Yeah.
To stop it from falling down. So. Yeah.
Well, I hope that the council can find the money from somewhere.
They found half a million so far. Yeah.
Stump up the money. That'll be nice.
A bit of a shame. But yeah, no, I thought that'd be a nice bit of a blast from the past.
That's lovely. So it's lovely. Yeah, I remember.
Gives you a glimpse. And in case you're wondering, we don't really have it. I don't know if it's still a thing. I'm a bit too old to know if it's still a thing. I think Grindr and the like kind of killed off what would have been called a cottage.
I don't think. I mean, I used to do outreach work with Terence Higgins Trust on the cruising sites around Bristol, but already in the 2000s it was a dying art.
Yeah.
And I doubt if there's many people up Fairyland tonight, not on a cold like this.
But if you're listening, and my point was more, if you're listening, you're like, what on earth is that? In the days when homosexuality was illegal, gay men did used to meet in places like public toilets, and it was known as cottaging.
Because they looked like cottages.
They were built
like a country cottage.
Yeah.
And cruising, of course, cruising sites were places like the parts of the Downs, up by the observatory tower, up by the water tower on the Downs, and various other places that were a bit more opportunistic.
Is that not when the police used to try and catch people out?
They did used to do raids, yeah, because entrapment was a thing. Yeah.
So
they would send
a young, pretty policeman
in. Peter Tatchell actually was one that led the campaign to stop that, because what they did was went and pulled all the photos of the policemen and put them in every single gay venue. and the police went, you can't do that. And it turned out they absolutely could, because their photos are a matter of public record, because they have to have it for their license on their badge and the like. So it kind of... Curtailed it. So,
yeah.
Interestingly, did you know Park Street was a cruising ground if you go back to the Victorian era?
It doesn't surprise me.
Do you know why?
If you go
back to the kind of Victorian era, it was very much a time when going to church on a Sunday was a big thing, and you get up and you put your Sunday best on and you would all go off to church.
Yeah.
Of course, all the families, all the heterosexuals did. Gay men didn't. They would go walking up and down Park Street looking in the shop windows, and you would have that kind of gaydar thing, if you like, where you'd look away, and if they look again, oh, they might be, and you get talking, and the cruising ground.
We touched upon it, didn't we, in a news article the other week, that molly houses, as they were known in the even earlier period, going back to the Georgian period in the 1720s, were a big thing in London, and they've actually calculated, or historian called Richter Norton calculated, that there were more gay venues in 1720 in London than there were in 1950 when they started work on the Wolfenden Report.
Wow.
So there's been a long history of urban gay culture as well.
Yeah, and again, in case you're not aware, the Wolferdin Report was one that came out in the 60s, which was, I mean, at that point they thought that homosexuality was something you either caught or you chose to do, etc., and the like. And the Wolferdin Report actually was the report into one, though, actually, these people, they thought, could do with help rather than oppression and being locked up.
And prostitution as well. It also dealt with prostitution.
Did it?
Wolferdin was also about Huntleys and Palmers, he called them. So Huntleys were the homosexuals. These were Huntleys and Palmers were brands of cigarette. And John Wolferdin actually said, called homosexuals Huntleys, and in his notes wrote prostitutes as Palmers, so the secretaries wouldn't have to write the words, type the words homosexual or prostitute.
Oh, really?
That's why he did it, yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
It was all in code.
And it was, I mean, it kind of helped, but it also didn't, the Wolferdin Report. I mean, the bringing to prominence also led to a rife of homophobia.
It did, but then a couple of years after that, you have the sort of counterculture in the US, anti-Vietnam War protests, the women's movements, Black Panthers, and gay liberation blows out the closet at the same time as part of all that social change.
Well, that's been challenged, isn't it? With the pride flag being taken down.
So the Stonewall Inn, America is very
they're
much a reaction.
They're suing now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Flag going down.
So, anyway, a little bit of history for you. A bit more up to date. One of the things we wanted to talk about quickly before the end of the show, of course, was the WI as well.
Yeah, some of the groups have been closing down because they're against the whole idea that they should exclude trans people.
Good.
You know?
Good on them.
The fact that they've got to answer a question about, you know, what gender were you born as well, you know? Mm. It's like...
Yeah. Aren't they actually starting up a new organisation in parallel? Aren't they some getting together?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that would be the
I've
ideal, wouldn't
that,
it?
Yes.
Or, I mean,
well,
I guess there's two
the
ways to do it, isn't it?
Be,
it's fight back.
Yeah, the idea would be
internally.
That, I mean, because the WI, from everything I understand, it has done an awful lot throughout its history. Good.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is actually that they learn and educate and adopt a policy that isn't trans exclusionary. Yeah. You know, we know the right way it should be. But it is very nice to see. And I think you said next week we're talking to Not In Our Name, aren't we? Who I'm sure
it
will...
might be the week after.
Okay, well, we've got them coming up.
We have.
Tune listen to that, because I'm sure they will have a take on it, because, you know, there is a backlash from women saying, no, you're wrong.
I remember
right.
I got a message from one of my friends who is part of the WI, and she was absolutely so annoyed.
Yeah,
about it, you know. Yeah.
My mum would be as well. She's been in the WI for years, and it hasn't even crossed their minds. You know, if all the complaints, and the WI complain a great deal, rightly so, about government policy in the third world and all this kind of stuff. Not a single WI has raised an issue about a trans woman in the toilet or anything like that. Yeah. You know, it's just
isn't it statistically to the government? There's been like 4 complaints, full stop, about trans.
That was about trans youth, wasn't it?
It wasn't anything to do with toilets. No,
that was the hormones and the gender youth, wasn't it?
My point is, the people actually reporting things as a problem is like minuscule.
Oh yeah,
The people going, oh, this is terrible, are like, you know.
There's an inordinate amount of airtime on the BBC and an inordinate amount of press time on the front pages as well.
Yeah.
But what's
trans.
It hiding?
Is
what's
it
hiding?
0.1 of a percentage of the population, yet we're taking up a lot of airtime and
a lot of column inches
and pages.
In the papers.
To hide the fact we're financially we're a bit strapped for cash at the moment, aren't we, as a country?
That's right. Well, yeah, exactly.
It is well known that when the general populace is feeling oppressed or the like, they lash out at minorities.
What do you think the LGB Alliance are thinking now? Because Reform, who they obviously back and in bed with, are now saying they're going to remove the Equalities Act. And everyone warned them that you drop the T, that you're going to be next.
Absolutely.
Ironically, it's Suella Braverman that is championing it too, isn't it? It's ironic someone in the minority is also saying, yes, I want the Equalities Act dropped.
Oh. Yes, it is.
fled
over here with their parents.
Whole other show in itself. But it demonstrates why, you know, doing our history is an important thing.
Yeah. And why pride,
and why pride is such a thing. And anyone that says pride is political, well, it's only...
It kind of is,
but it's also, you know, it's just... It's there to keep a voice in us visual.
It
and anyone that hates the what some people incorrectly call the pride flag, I will point out it's not. It's an equalities flag. And it's for everyone. There isn't a single bit on that flag that says gay, lesbian, trans, bi, whatever. So, anyway, I'll get down off my high horse because we've got to do the outro. So that's it for this week. If you have an event story or perhaps you'd like to get involved in LGBT plus radio, do check us out online and please get in touch.
Plus, all our shows are available on podcast on all good services as well. If you're feeling adventurous, you could go to our website. That's shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Next week, hopefully, we're catching up with Pride. But for myself and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.